southwestern Wisconsin has dealt with heavy flooding in recent years, and storms last August took a major toll for people living in the Kickapoo River and Coon Creek watersheds. A new project from the Driftless Writing Center is collecting stories from residents about their experiences during that flood and how communities came together to recover. Stories from the Flood has a goal of 200 stories. Tomorrow evening, people can hear some of what's been collected so far at a celebration of resilience that's being held at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. Tamara Dean is an author whose books include The Human Powered Home. She's a board member for the Driftless Writing Center. Tamara, thanks so much for coming up to the studio today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is a part of the state that was hit with a lot of floods in recent years. But last year, give us a sense of how severe this one was.
It was. I mean, we've had, depending on how you count them, 6 or 7 100-year floods in the last 12 years. But on August 27th of 2018, the rain just kept coming and coming, and some villages received 13 inches of rain. This one was unusual, too, because some of the flood control dams that had been built in the last part of the last century broke. So all this water caused the edges of the berms to dissolve, basically, and all this water came downstream.
We saw this in the news as it was happening, of course. We've talked some about the recovery. What led you and your colleagues to want to collect these firsthand accounts of people's experiences?
Yeah, you know, some of us on the board were helping with cleanup in the days after that terrible flood. And we thought, you know, we're happy to mop and to haul away refuse, but we'd like to do something more for people. And what the Driftless Writing Center does the best, really, is help people tell stories. And we also knew about the research that shows when people tell their stories, they begin to heal and move forward. So we thought, okay, we can collect people's stories and be listening ears for people who want to share their stories and help them move through it.
As you started to ask people to recount their experiences, did you get a sense that there was a hunger to be heard and to relive this and share it with other people? Relive might be the wrong word.
Right. I don't know if there's a hunger to relive it, but we definitely, you know, it depended on the person, but in a lot of cases, people were very eager to share the details of their experiences. You know, first we conceived this as a writing project. So we hosted all these workshops in libraries in Vernon and Crawford counties mainly. And yet we found pretty quickly that people either weren't comfortable with writing or would actually rather talk. So it's turned into more of an oral history project. But yes, I definitely think that people feel a little lighter when they leave and they're happy to make it known what they experienced.
You let us get a preview of some of the excerpts from this that you'll be sharing at this event. And I got to say, this is pretty powerful stuff, these firsthand accounts. It is a little different than reading about it in the paper the day after.
It really is. We heard some things over and over, and I guess they shouldn't surprise us, but many people are still processing what happened. And part of that is, you know, whenever it rains, they're anxious. They don't sleep the night if there's a thunderstorm, or some people will just leave their homes if it's raining more than an hour. We also heard a lot of stories about gratitude and humility and the communities coming together, which also shouldn't surprise us here in the Midwest and Wisconsin. But those were some of the themes, and some of those are reflected in the book.
I wanted to focus in on that point a little bit because there is a lot of talk about loss, what people lost, their homes entirely, their possessions, things like that. But there is a lot of talk about how this pulled people together. Can you talk more about the kind of things you've heard?
Yeah, I mean, we've heard amazing stories about first responders who drove hours to help people get out of the floodwaters on that night that they had to evacuate. And then we also heard about different sports teams at high schools who weren't affected coming in to help people empty their homes the day after. You know, a lot of people who are living by the rivers might be elderly or they might have difficulties moving around, so they really did need help. We all needed help because so much was destroyed in that flood.
Just little stories, too. Like there's one, somebody said they had to sell their, I think it was an electric piano, to raise money to replace some of their stuff. And the person who bought it heard their story, paid full price, and threw in an extra $100 just to help out. It's amazing little stories like that.
Right. There's so much generosity and compassion that follows a disaster like this. But, you know, once you get past the cleanup and this community outpouring of goodwill, we still have to deal with the consequences, and that's where this stage of grieving moves along, and maybe we're left alone or we experience an incident that makes us relive like another storm. And this year, we've had so much rain. The rivers are still high. The ground is still saturated, and farmers have had difficulty getting their crops in back in the spring. So we don't feel like we've put this behind us.
Talking to Tamara Dean from the Driftless Writing Center, looking at their project, Stories from the Flood, collecting firsthand accounts from people affected by a huge flood last summer. Tamara, a lot of ambivalence about a place that people clearly love, the rivers they love, the landscape they love, and people asking themselves, can I stay here? Do I trust the river? Can you talk about some of the love/fear people have now?
Yeah, that's a big component. A lot of people who are living by the rivers, their families have been there for generations. And something that I don't think a lot of people understand about last year's flooding was that people who didn't even live in the floodplain and had never been affected by all those 100 or 500 year floods previously were affected by this flood. So they saw no reason to get flood insurance or to move to higher ground. But all those conversations are going on now. It is just torturous, you know, to try to figure out where do you go from here for both the communities and the individuals. But also, a lot of people have their whole life savings in their home. And if they don't get a buyout, you know, they're sort of stuck. So it's not a matter of moving at a whim.
Right. You were touching on this earlier. This is not a piece of history for people. They're still living with trying to figure out, in some cases, how they're going to financially recover from last year's flood.
Right. And, you know, we did get grants from FEMA and from different programs at the state and county levels. But obviously, that can't cover all of people's expenses. And with more and more disasters happening around the nation, the FEMA money, at least, the federal money, is getting stretched thinner. So communities are coming together and beginning those discussions about resilience. What is the best use for that land along the river? And can it be spun in a positive way if we don't have homes there? Is this a place where floodwaters can collect and keep them from, you know, affecting other parts of the community? Is it, a wetland or something?
You have this celebration of resilience coming up tomorrow. Is that right? Can you talk about what you're hoping to come out of this event?
Yeah, that's right. Tomorrow, Thursday, November 7th, we're going to have an event at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve Visitor Center, which is just north of the village of Lafarge along Highway 131, for anybody who hasn't been out there. It's a great place. We're inviting people who told us their stories. We're inviting partners, including the library systems in our area, and the general public to join us and to get a copy of this booklet that collects the narrative excerpts and some photos from our project, and also to share their own stories. We'll have a few speakers, including Brad Steinmetz, who's a local historian from Lafarge, and Dr. Caroline Druschke here from the UW-Madison. She and her students have been helping us out on the project, and give a shout-out to them because it's just been amazing to have a partnership with the university on this.
I was looking at all the places that the people in this pamphlet were from, and then I went over to maps online. This covered, honestly, a bigger area than I had remembered at the time. This is a huge swath along a couple waterways.
It really was, all the way from Wilton at the north to Wazika in the south along the Kickapoo River watershed, and, you know, from Coon Valley all the way out to the Mississippi River. People were affected in the low-lying areas. And it happened rapidly overnight, and like I said, in places where they'd never seen floodwaters like this before.
So it's a celebration of resilience coming up. As we wrap up, are people more consciously thinking about the idea of resilience after this flood, whether they're using the word resilience or not?
Yeah, definitely. People are talking about whether individually or as a community, how to withstand the next heavy rains. I don't think that anybody imagines that this won't happen again. So we're planning, and villages are working together to come up with solutions.
Tamara, thanks so much for coming up and joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
Tamara Dean is an author and board member for the Driftless Writing Center. She's part of the ongoing project Stories from the Flood. Tomorrow night's event, again, is happening at 6 o'clock at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve Visitor Center. It's free and open to the public.